welcome back to another installment, yet another installment of the Parish of the Patriots. Believe it or not, is the 122nd installment of this show. If you think it isn't tough to do 122 episodes of a show and have it still stay interesting and fresh, then I've got news for you. It's tough, but I'm up to the task, and you, the listeners, are up for the task as well. Thank you for stopping by. If you're new around these parts, yes, we do have a Christian-specific message later on in the show. Probably going to want to check that out. It's up to you. The show financially supported by you, the listeners. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. You can find that information. You skip down to the bottom of the description page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We got Monero. If you have a weirdo cryptocurrency, got an email address down there, drop me an email. I'll do my best to get you an address for your whatever the hell cryptocurrency you got. And, you know, drop me a note. Crypto supporters, drop me a note. The listener supporter mailbag is one of my favorite parts of the show. Speaking of which, we're going to jump right into that. And first up is from Jackie, hoping that all is well and you know, none the worse for wear and clown society. We're still here. We're still on this show. We're still doing. We're still speaking the truth. So it's as well as it can be in the middle of societal collapse. The show, it's like a haven. It's like a haven of sanity in clown world. So yes, we're doing as well as possible. From Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters, GPD, I would love to hear your opinion about the Tower of Babel. Wasn't an actual tower. I've often heard you refer to it and its relevance to modern America. Well, it's relevant to the world in general. I think whether you want to think of the Tower of Babel as a literal tower that was built, and yes, I think it probably was, or you just want to think of it as symbolism. If you want to understand the importance and the relevance of it, look at its importance and relevance to the Satanists. And by that I mean, if you haven't, take a look. The EU Parliament building is literally a recreation of the Tower of Babel. If you look at ancient artwork, you know, that was depicted what the Tower of Babel looked like. And now you look at the EU Parliament. They literally built their Parliament building for the EU to look like the Tower of Babel. So it's obviously relevant to the Satanists. It's obviously relevant to those who follow Satan. As Christian believers, we're used to seeing patterns, you know, patterns through, our relationship with the Lord through history and as Christian believers. But you have to understand that, like, Satan and Satan's people, they too are locked into patterns and they follow these same symbolisms, or they're like obsessed. I mean, that's probably not a conscious thing for them, but for Satan, it's this obsession. They follow this cycle as well. I think it is interesting if you talk about the Tower of Babel. Why would they design this hideous building to look like the Tower of Babel? Obviously, it holds a symbolism for them. And again, it doesn't have to be a conscious symbolism. It's a sign. It's a reflection of that rejection of Christ, of that following of Satan, of following this world. I do. I find that very interesting. Why, out of all the designs, I could have just made another ugly skyscraper like they always tend to do. Why would they feel the urge to make it a model like we're rebuilding the Tower of Babel? We are proudly declaring our open rebellion, our open rejection of the Lord. Just can't help it. Let's keep on going. This is from Brian. Thank you very much for your support, Brian. It is very much appreciated. Hail, brother, as I always hope this finds you well. You and your family are my daily prayers, and I do appreciate that, by the way. Please let me know if there are any specific requests. Brian follows up with some requests of his own. And the first of which I'm not going to get into because it's kind of, you know, personal as far as own dealings. I do my best to respect y'all's privacy and how I share things here on the show. But as to the first request, I think what your real question is with that is how to really follow God's guidance. And my best pro tip with it, understanding and asking the Lord, when you're asking the Lord to guide you, you know, in things you're doing in this world, you know, not just simply spiritual things, but how, you know, because they overlap. You're trying to walk the right path and you're trying to walk a successful path. And you know that God has the right path set for you, and you pray and you want God to guide you and guide and have you be successful in your endeavors and whatnot, and have you grow as you should as a Christian believer. And as long as you earnestly seek the Lord, he will have you grow as a Christian believer, whether that's in success or failure. That is, you will grow as long as you do not abandon the faith. Of course, we all prefer success over failure. So we try to find God's path as early as we can so that it leads to success in this life. And as you do that, the best thing I can tell you is as you pray to the Lord to guide you on what you should do, you have to get your mind in a position. You have to get your heart in a position to where you truly are open to him rejecting and closing the path that you're trying to follow. I mean, you can't have the mindset that no matter what you do, you know, God doesn't want you to do that because you won't do anything, obviously. But I'm saying that as you seek and pray and seek the Lord and ask him to guide you, you really have to get in. Because as long as you're kind of like you're just looking for God to put his stamp of approval on what you want to do, then you're not open in case you are headed down the wrong path. And he says, nah, you shouldn't do that. You have to really, and it's hard. It's hard. I'm telling you, it's hard. But you have to get in a place in your mind and your heart to where you're totally open. If God says no, closes this path off and says, no, that's not a successful path for you. You need to go this direction. You have to be in a spot where you can accept that, because as long as you're not, as long as your heart is closed off to that possibility, then he's not going to be able to show you the way you should go. Does that make any sense? Getting your mind and your heart right as you seek God's guidance, God's will in your life, as it were, you're asking God to guide you on a successful path. You have to be in a position to where you're willing to accept that he's going to say, no, you can't do that because you really want to do something. You know, that's where you got to be. That's where you got to get to be, to where then you can hear this. You can hear the Lord speak to you. You can understand what God is direction God is sending you in. You have to get in a position. As long as you're not in this position where you're totally open to God saying no, you know, you got to try to get as close to a spot to where if God says yes, continue to move forward. That's what you should do. You got to be equally in that position where if God says no, don't go where you think you want to go. That's not where you need to go. You need to go another direction, maybe a direction I haven't shown you yet. You got to be to where as close to where you're equally open to all those possibilities. And then you're going to be more open to hearing, you know, to understanding God's guidance. Hopefully that makes sense. As to the second, is about tithing. I've been poor so much of my life that I've always struggled with tithing, and I admit there's some fear there from having been poor so much and often ending up with a dollar at the end of the week. I've struggled with tithing. I know that fear is the opposite of faith, but I just really want God to speak to me about tithing. Anyway, I hope you and your family are well, brother, from Brian, and very much appreciate it. The tithing thing, y'all listen to this young guy. He's going to use this as an opportunity to shill, to send money to him, but I'm not. What you have to understand about tithing in the biblical sense, because people get hung up on that whole 10% of the income thing, and then they look at the Old Testament and it's like, well, people tell you, you know, because they will. They tell you, well, you need to be, you know, you can turn on your favorite televangelist, and at some point in time, if you watch them long enough, they're going to hit you up and be like, you need to be giving me 10% of your income. Then God's going to give you a new house. I mean, tithing is not a hard thing to understand if you look at the biblical context of it. When God established tithing in the Old Testament, he said, okay, out of this group of people, out of this faction, out of this tribe of Israel, these guys' job is to do nothing but take care of the church, to take care of the tabernacle, to take care of these things of the Lord. They're not going to be able to work in the field. They have been appointed. Their job is to do this, to do my work. They're not able to work in the field. As a result of that, they can't work in the field. They can't buy and sell in the marketplace. They can't do any of these other things because God's given them this one thing to do. So how are they going to make a living? So God mandated, well, the people are going to support them. It was basically God was acting as the government. God was collecting a tax to support this part of what he was doing. Does that make sense? It's like a God tax. And he mandated it so that people would be sure and actually do it and not just blow it off. Now, to understand this in a modern context, Dr. Johnson, Dr. J, one of our fellow hosts here at Radio Albion, he made a statement at one point in time. I'm paraphrasing. It was along the lines of, you know, look, if you're not able to stick your neck out here and advocate for people or advocate for these things, and, you know, you've got a family support, you got to keep your job, you can't afford to lose your job. He made the statement that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You have nothing to be ashamed of about that. You know, we get it. Everybody gets that. Not everybody can go out there and stick their neck out and speak the truth publicly and afford to lose their jobs and to put themselves in, you know, basically with a big target on their back. He said there's nothing wrong with that, but you should at least try to financially support those who are doing that. And I don't know, by the way, and I don't know of anybody who whether Dr. J or myself or anybody else, that expects you to send 10% of your income. The point is that, again, much like in the Old Testament, people who are advocating the truth, we don't have the opportunities to go, you know, just settle into an army job somewhere and do okay, because you know, we do have a big target on our back, as it were. But if you understand it kind of like that, you know, I mean, nobody, I don't know anybody. You can't get hung up on the 10% of the income, because again, that was a different thing God had established and for a reason. If you think of it as God was basically taxing, God was acting as the authority figure, as the central authority figure. Obviously, this was long before God had been replaced with the God of our democracy and our values. So God was acting as the central authority. God was acting as basically a government role by mandating a 10% tax to support these people who that is their only job. Because if not, then those people would have no way to make a living. It just makes sense. But again, there's no reason to get hung up on the 10% thing. That's nonsensical. And I don't think anybody should expect you to do that. So it's all about context, but there's nothing to get hung up on. And again, you know, understanding why and how God established that then, and you know, how that relates to you now. Don't get all twisted up over it. Let's keep rocking. This is from Andy. Grandpa just got done with a book called The Myth of the Andalusian Paradise: Muslims, Christians, and Jews Under Islamic Rule in Medieval Spain. And I thought I would share three interesting things that I learned from this book. One, the reason why Muslims were able to take over so much of Spain so fast was because they had the support of the Jews that were living there. So instead of having to leave a large portion of their army behind in conquered areas to keep order, they would put the Jews in charge that were already living there. This way, their entire army could move on and conquer the next area. This is very similar to what happened in Constantinople about 700 years earlier. Number two, just as in Judaism, part of Islam's doctrine says it's important for outsiders to exist for the purpose of exploiting them. They are happy for not everyone to convert, because those who refuse will be made to pay higher taxes. Of the three Abrahamic religions, Christianity is unique in this respect, as it doesn't see any other humans as people that God put there for them to exploit. And three, we know that there are many Arab intellectuals who made contributions to math and science. What most people don't know is that every single one of these intellectuals was actually over 99% European genetically. This was because their favorite people to breed with were blonde-haired, white, Christian sex slave girls. This went on for many hundreds of years, and it only takes seven generations for them to become over 99% European. Anyway, it's a very long book, and these are just crumbs, but these are the most memorable things to me personally. Hope you found these notes interesting. Keep up the great work. Great shows, as always. As I read point number two, I was reminded, and I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact quote, much less do I remember who said it, because it's been years since I heard it. But I was reminded of the quote that goes along the lines of, Islam is a political philosophy masquerading as a religion, and liberalism is a religion masquerading as a political philosophy. And I was thinking about how you pointed out the difference between Christianity and Judaism and Islam, and how much more of, you could almost make the argument that these things are actually more of a political philosophy even than a religion. Though I do believe there's obviously religious aspects to it as well. Anyway, you know, interesting stuff. Thanks very much for sharing. And finally, we're going to wrap up here. We got one final one here. And this one's pretty long, so we're just going to use this to go ahead and launch off into our regular discussion. We have a listener here who actually tried to have a rational, hypothetical, and philosophical discussion with women. So I salute your bravery, even if... Perhaps. I think it was a little misguided. Off to a good start. Gramps, something came up recently, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this. The situation was as follows. And this, like I said, this is long, so I'm probably just going to stop and discuss some of these topics as we go, because I thought this was kind of interesting. Otherwise, I would have edited it way down and just kind of gave a quick response. But I thought this was kind of an interesting discussion, and we can lead us off into talking about several different things. Because as usual, I think everybody kind of misses the points. They miss the forest for the trees a lot of times and get off on these tangents, as it were. I think that it's easy, and this is the problem with hypothetical situations and what would we do ifs, you know, and it gets real easy. It gets real easy to miss the point and to actually not ask the right questions. And as we go into this, I think we will highlight how all parties involved were not asking the correct question. Here, I think, what is the correct question? So let's get going here. The situation was as follows. Me, my wife, and a female friend were just chit-chatting about life and about old friends. At one point, our friend mentioned that a girl we knew had a kid with autism, and not the functional kind, but the other type, to which I remembered seeing something about it on Facebook. This led to a general disapproval of my wife, among my wife and friend, with how the government is not helping mothers in such conditions. And they even approved of the Soros-funded protests of these mothers who camped for 2 to 3 months in front of the Ministry of Social Affairs because the minister said they were screeching ladies with defective kids when they first protested because they wanted higher government aid. At that time, they were given the minimum salary for looking after their kids, but they wanted more because their kids were with special needs, which cost more than the average normal kid, to which they bent the government's hands, removed the social minister from office, and got a raise in their government aid. Of course, a few months later, they were again protesting because it still wasn't enough. And I'm going to stop there for a minute. You have to understand, one of the hardest things, and this is a hard, cold fact of reality for life. Life is hard. And sometimes people are in shitty situations, and you just have to live with that. It's not the government's job, it's not anybody else's job to relieve your shitty situation. Women in particular have a really hard time because women personalize everything. Women make everything personal. As we go through this, it becomes highlighted. But women get emotional about everything. They react emotionally, and everything becomes a personal thing. They cannot discuss. They have a very difficult time. And I would even say pretty much more or less incapable of looking at this sort of thing in the abstract. But a fact of life is that some people wind up with really shitty situations that make their life really hard. And that's just how it is. And by the way, everybody, from the trajectory we're on as a society, everybody is going to get really accustomed and get really familiar with shitty situations. And there's no magic wand that is going to fix that. So let's continue this here. In light of this, I commented that I find it horrible that we as a society are siding with the disabled kids' moms and their demand for more aid. We are valuing more children that won't grow up being a fully productive member of society, but instead a source of constant spending of social capital, while talented physically or mentally kids have to beg by opening donation boxes because they don't have money to buy a plane ticket for participating in, say, math Olympiad or gymnastics final in some other country because the sports ministry can't fund these. On top of that, your average mom has to work from 8 to 5 and give her child to be raised by the state, while the disabled kid's mom gets paid the average 8 to 5 salary to look after and raise her kid. And we're going to stop here to highlight what I think everybody involved is missing the important question, which is why do we have all of this, these different varying levels of autism at the level we do now? I think it's somewhere around 1990, the autism rate began exploding and growing. If you went back 50 years, did not have this level, this many people who are born with and suffer from autism. Like I say, and of course, this is on a scale. We're talking here about those who are on the non-functional side of the scale. But the question is why? Why? Because we didn't have this 50 years ago that we do now. Now you have all of these people with all of these different, there's a reason. Nobody ever wants to ask that question. Government damn sure doesn't. It's obviously something environmental, something that's been introduced into people's diet, perhaps the vaccines. I don't know. Some people argue that it's caused by the vaccine schedule. Some people argue that it's pollution and so. But the fact of the matter is, and we don't know. And I'm not pretending that I know. But the question should be asked. Why do we have it now? The government seems completely uninterested. I wish I could say I was surprised by that, but they're completely uninterested in asking that question. Is it plastics that we're exposed to constantly in our environment, from everything from our food to our drinking water? I don't know, because nobody will do a study on it. The government will spend millions and millions of dollars to study the mating habits of some obscure locust in South Africa, but they have no interest in funding a study to discover why do we have this level of autism that we never had before. There's no interest, but that tells you they probably already know. They just don't want to tell you about it. You see, you get the studies that are going to give the result that they want to promote the agenda. It's just how they tell us that we have to follow the experts on the Doom virus. But you can find, well, if they haven't been banned yet, they're banning them as quickly as they can. But you can find experts who will tell you that this is a whole thing is a hoax. But those experts don't count. You only get the experts. You only get the studies that reinforce the narrative. Thus, I find it very curious that they have no interest in funding any studies to discover why do we have this level. Why do we have these people being born this way? In other words, before we get off into what should we do with these people, I think the real question is, why do we have this many of these people? You're always going to have people that are born retarded. I mean, that's not supposed to be a politically correct term. It's not a derogatory term. There are people who are born retarded, mentally disabled, whatever the case may be. That is a fact of life. And if that happens to somebody in their family, you know, that's a shitty situation for them, but they have to bear it. It's your cross to bear. It's your life to live, and you got to live with it. But the real question that doesn't get asked is, why do we have this level of it now? What is up with that? It seems like that, because if we answered that question, we could correct that environmental factor. If we knew what was causing it, we could eliminate that. And then we wouldn't have these people to begin with. We wouldn't be asking the question, what do we do with them? Because there would be so few of them that it wouldn't really be a big deal to figure that out. The problem is we have all of them, but they don't want anyone asking why that is. So let's continue with this discussion. To which my wife was stunned at my reply and asked me, well, what else do you propose these moms do with their kids? Now, you'll see this shift, this emotional shift. And again, this is something women tend to do, but you can also get effeminate men that do the exact same thing. You see, they try to take an abstract, you start off with an abstract conversation. You're talking about things in the abstract. What about these people? Now they try to shift it to being personal. Well, it's not your job to personally figure out what you should do with these moms and nurses. It's not your job to personally figure out their shitty situation. That's their job. They're the ones that have the situation. Is it society's problem to come along and figure out how to fix the problems in my life? Well, no, I don't think so. Anyway, okay. Anyway, you shouldn't be surprised by it because this is what you get. Anyway, what do you propose these moms do with their kids? To which I proposed euthanasia. It's just like a nuclear bomb on the conversation. Congratulations. My argument for this was simple. I side with Sven's view that a child has the right to be born in a healthy body. If not, then I think it's horrible to have them stay in a body that apparently can't function, at least so they can care for themselves. I mentioned that having such a kid is a torture to the parent, to the kid's siblings, and even the community, since once the parent dies, then this disabled adult has to be taken care of by the community. That were never asked if they wanted to do this. And not in last place, the fact that no doubt this kid, even though it cannot express it, probably will suffer from the fact that it won't be able to enjoy life like other children. I can imagine this conversation went downhill, to which my wife responded that what I was proposing was horrible, and that if our child gets born that way, since we're expecting our second child, and what if our child gets born that way since we're expecting our second child? Again, you see this pattern, and you will see this if you should expect it, especially if you're dealing with women. But again, with effeminate men, you'll get the same thing. You'll get this shift to, oh yeah, well, what about you? What about if it's you personally? But you're not talking about you personally. An argument I kind of find annoying, since most of these women usually give that reply. What if your child gets born like that? As if I didn't say it and sided with their demands for more and more money, somehow I'll magically be protected from an eventual disabled kid, simply because I said the magic word, I support the disabled. So I told her that I would still support this, even if it was my own kid, to which she said that then I would be a murderer and I wanted to kill somebody, I should start with myself. Now we've gone hyper-personal. Now you should just go down. Now you should just go die. This is why going off into discussions like this is usually quite pointless. I didn't respond to this, but now that I think of it, it's another case where we are demanded to value more disabled person than a person who can not only take care of themselves, but also take care of others and be an overall net positive to a community. But it all ended with our friend saying, well, taking someone else's life is forbidden by God and it's not Christian, to which I had no reply. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think about this? I know the Catholic Church is highly against anything that has to do with taking another person's life, even if it is with the concept that you are relieving him from a life of suffering. I was also thinking that we are willing to euthanize a dog, a cat, a horse, a cow, save it from pointless suffering, but we are not willing to give this option to our own children and even adults. I still remember watching my mom suffer for 2 months from the final stages of cancer, which was pointless since the doctors were obliged to respond to her condition, thus doing nothing more than just prolonging her suffering until she passed away. Is it Christian to want to make sure someone is not pointlessly suffering? Well, this whole conversation, I'm glad you shared it with us. It went downhill, obviously. I would have avoided this entire conversation like the plague, because as you see, it didn't end well. It turned into you should just go kill yourself because suicide is wrong. You can't make any sense of this because, again, you get this emotional reaction to these things. Okay, as to your shouldn't we just euthanize these people? I've already made the point that I think the real question that should be asked, the really relevant question, is why do we have so many people that are born with these different conditions now that we didn't have before? It's obviously an environmental thing. The government has no interest in discovering, which means corporations are doing it. but beyond that, to the larger, here's the problem. Okay, are you going to set up a commission then? A euthanasia could look at the clown world government that we have, the Zog governments that you live under, that we live under. Do you trust these people to make these decisions? Do you really want anyone remotely related to this government making the decisions of who should be, quote unquote, put out of their misery? This is the slippery slope once again presented that you would go down. I mean, you can have this view that, oh, well, this would, you know, there would be a commission and you would have to have a unanimous vote. Who's going to get on the commission? Who's going to appoint those on the commission? Because if you look at how the government is run now and who gets appointed to positions now, here in the U.S., we have the Supreme Court and they go through a hearing to see who gets appointed to the Supreme Court. And then once they're there, they do whatever the hell they want to. Do we want a Supreme Court deciding that, say, oh, I don't know, your Islamophobia, your homophobia, your whatever we've designated as a mental condition is just causing society as a whole and even you yourself needless suffering. It's time for you to be euthanized. I don't want to trust these people. I wouldn't want to trust these people with those sorts of decisions. Now, as to like people who get cancer, it's a horrible, horrible thing, you know, and you know, we should be able to euthanize them. But the problem is, those people already have that option. I know of people, I have known of people who have cancer run in their family and watched family members suffer and die from cancer. And they themselves diagnosed with cancer. And they went home, took care of their personal affairs and, you know, killed themselves. You know, so they already have that option of euthanasia. See, this is the problem with government euthanasia. It takes the responsibility off of yourself and puts it on somebody else. We want to give the government the power to kill us off, to relieve us of our suffering, but you can do that yourself. There's any number of ways a person can kill themselves. Not saying that you should run out and do that, but to propose that, oh, well, we should hand that off and give that responsibility to somebody else. I don't want anybody else having that responsibility. I don't want anybody else making that decision for me of when I die. If I'm going to take a voluntary exit from this world, I'm going to be the one that makes that decision. I don't want somebody else making it for me. I think that's the really relevant thing to look at here. Now, obviously, if you're talking about disabled children that can't possibly do that for themselves, well, again, yeah, I'm sorry, but life is hard. Life is hard, and if that's what you get settled with, that's the road you've got to hoe. That's when you rely on family members. But again, the bigger question is why it's so widespread. So why do we have so much more of this than we had in history before? I think that is really the relevant question. But again, as far as euthanasia for those who are suffering and those who say have terminal cancer, you already can do that. And a person that decides they want to do that should be able to make that decision for themselves. Shouldn't be up to their family. Shouldn't be up to their kids. Shouldn't be up to the government for damn sure. They can make that decision for themselves. And they can off themselves. And as far as, you know, what does that mean from a spiritual standpoint? It's a really murky thing. And I'm not going to sit here and speak from some authority position. But like if you have a month left to live and you're suffering greatly, you're just in agonizing pain from cancer and you decide to store up your morphine dose and take it all at once, just go ahead and get it over with. Do I personally think that God is going to hold that against you? Not really. There were times in the past when, you know, soldiers would, you know, commanders and kings would lead armies and their armies would be defeated. And they knew that the enemy army would torture them to death and they'd fall on their own swords rather than to be tortured to death by the enemy army. So, I mean, me personally, and this is just, again, this is just me personally. I'm not sitting here saying, this is what the Lord says. I mean, you know, somebody that's just facing, there is no hope. There is no future. There is nothing but pain and suffering. There's only a month left to live. I don't necessarily think that God holds that against somebody. But I damn sure don't think we should hand that power over to the government or a commission that the government appoints. Somebody's going to set up said commission and give them this power. And as men are corruptible, so this would become corruptible as well. I think it is really illustrative of why it's important. Giving women this big say in how our affairs is around feminism, I guess you would just encompass it with feminism. Why that was so important? Because they do internalize and personalize everything and react from an emotional standpoint. If people, you know, since women react emotionally to everything and personalize and make everything over empathetic. You know, if I was that person, how would I feel? And it's sad and this, all you have to do then, if you have this large segment of the society who is obviously easily emotionally manipulated and you give them power and say so in the direction of society, in the direction of the government, then your task is easy. It's hard to convince a bunch of logical thinking men to go take society in a suicidal direction because they think these things through, by and large, or they're supposed to. Maybe not now, but by and large. So if you have women that have all of this power, all you have to do is emotionally manipulate them, and it is very easy to do. Whether you intended to or not, you didn't intend to with this discussion. It went downhill, obviously. But what you were doing was emotionally manipulating them. Again, you weren't doing that intentionally, but it is a demonstration how quickly they got upset and they personalized everything. If you were doing this to lead to an outcome that you desired, see how easy it was? You set them off emotionally and they went in a certain direction. If you were steering, again, this was unintentional on your part, but if you were intentionally steering them in that direction, see how easy that was. You did it without even trying. Speaking of environmental impacts on our health, you know, I was talking about why they won't ever study or answer the questions as to why we have all these people with these mental disabilities being born now that we didn't have before. Here's another question for you. Why do people look the way they do now? And I think it's related. I really do. Not just the obesity thing, but I mean, you look at so many of these women in the West now. And of course, I'm speaking from an America-centric standpoint. You have all of these women that have these huge man jaws and they have these masculine features. And they're yes, they're still women, but they look like men. And on the flip side of that, you have these effeminate men now that not just look effeminate in their appearance, but they react just as these women. They're emotional. They personalize everything and they go on. They're literally like women, except they technically do not have the anatomy of a woman. Why do we have this now? We didn't have this. Well, not just long ago in history. When I was a young man, when I was a kid, we didn't have people that looked like this. You had outliers, but you didn't have people like this. You didn't have people that walked around, these huge fat people. Well, there's huge, all these fat people. You didn't have women that walked around that had a big lantern jaw, looked like some Western, you know, some actor in a Western movie from the 1950s. Big masculine guy, he's got a big jaw, and he walks around like a man. You know, and you have these women that look like that. They look like a guy from a Western action series from the 50s. They're big man jaw. They're narrow hips. Their manly way of looking. But they're women. And no, I'm not talking about lesbians and dykes. I'm just saying, you look at all these women with these masculine features, and then you have all of these effeminate men, and nobody seems to be interested in the question, why? There has to be something different. There has to be something in the environment that is causing this to happen. And it's probably the same thing that's causing people to be born on this varying scale of autism. Why the hell are we not asking these questions? Why the hell is the government not interested in finding out? There's zero interest. We're busy promoting this COVID hoax. We're busy worrying about the weather changing. We're the climate change hoax. It doesn't matter how many of their dire predictions. And I'm old enough. I've seen them all. I'm old enough. I remembered when the climate change prediction was we were having a new ice age and we were all going to freeze to death and there would be no crops. Then we moved to the world's going to burn up and by 2012, New York City's going to be underwater. And now we're just climate change. It's warming, cooling. It's whatever the hell. If you get a hurricane during hurricane season, it's because of climate change. They're busy promoting these hoaxes. And then we look around and you have real issues. All of these people being born with various forms of autism or other forms of retardation. You got men that look like women and emotionally act like women. You got women that are getting more and more masculine features physically. And nobody wonders why the hell, what the hell changed? Why is this happening now? This is not normal. It's not normal that you have these effeminate men. It's not normal that you have women that have a huge hulking lantern jaw. That is not normal. That is not historical norm. That's not what people are supposed to look like. No interest. No interest in discovering why that is. They say they care about the environment. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's something in our environment that is doing this to people. What is it? As I said earlier, I suspect they already know the answer to that, and that's why they're not interested in telling you about it. We're being poisoned. There's no other way to put about it. We are being poisoned. Being poisoned mentally. We're being poisoned physically. We're being poisoned spiritually for damn sure. And I need to get off and do a Christian-specific segment on that. Maybe next week. I don't know. But we're being poisoned in every aspect of our lives. And apparently, obviously, they're not interested in talking about that. They'll spend millions of dollars to discover the mating habits of the cicada or whatever the hell else. They'll spend millions of dollars to tell you that pornography, if you expose little children to pornography, nothing's wrong with that. But no interest. They won't spend a red cent to discover why do people look like this? Why do we have all of these people being born with these mental disabilities? They claim to care. They sit there and have an argument about how much money should we give these people. How about having an argument of, well, why the hell is this happening in the first place and how can we stop it? They have no interest in discovering, hey, maybe we need, no, we'll have a debate on how much money to give some women to live off of to raise their disabled kids. We'll fuss and fight about that, but the government has no interest in spending a red cent to discover why is this happening. Because if we could figure out why it's happening and stop that, then maybe, just maybe, we wouldn't have to worry about the problem to begin with. But they don't care about that. We're going to wrap up on the regular portion of the show. We need to get into our Christian-specific segment so we don't run too long, which, of course, we always run long. It's a tradition here at the Parish of the Patriots. We always run long. Anyway, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note and get into this week's sermon. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. It's time for this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as you get settled in this week, I figured we'd just go ahead and get our Bible verse reading out of the way before we have our Christian-specific discussion this week. Let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. We'll start with verse 1. I charge thee, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom, preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. Proverbs 26, verse 12, seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? There is more hope of a fool than of him. Now, I want to jump back and reread this part of 2 Timothy 3 and 4, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. They'll chase after false teachers. They'll chase after those who will tell them what they want to hear. They will chase after those that, who will just simply reinforce that which they already believe, that which they already desire. They do not want somebody to rebuke them. They don't want somebody to tell them, oh, you're on the wrong path. They want somebody to say everything's okay. We are of no shortage of these false teachers who will fill their itching ears so that they can chase after their lusts. I would say a very significant, if not the vast majority of the MCC is of this manner. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. They will chase after false doctrines. They will chase after things that are not true. They will chase after falsehoods. We are surely in a time when they shall not, when the people as a whole, when the society as a whole will not tolerate sound doctrine. Right is called wrong. If you speak the truth, you will be shut down. If you speak the truth on social media, you're going to be banned. We talked last week about, you know, the actual scientific method and how science isn't in conflict with Christianity, but instead science, if the actual scientific method, what should be, what is defined technically as science, not this nonsense that they do today. For again, it's a chasing after a false doctrine, because it's actual scientific method. You do an experiment. You learn about God's creation and you discover the order in that creation. We're not going to rehash that this week. We talked about this at pretty good length last week. So if you missed that, you might want to check that out. But the point is, science, the scientific method proves God's creation. It proves God's creation. It proves the order. These things were created not of chaos, but of order, of a plan, of a consciousness. Now, we can't do a laboratory experiment and scientific method to prove Christianity, to prove our Christian beliefs. However, what we can do is look at history. What did peak Christianity look like? At peak Christianity in our history, think about this. At peak Christianity in our history, and again, you can't get the, oh, well, it wasn't perfect. Oh, yeah, well, what about this? Well, of course, because we're talking about people. We're talking about men, and men are faulty. Men are fallen. On this earth, as long as you're a man in a body walking around this earth, you're going to have faults. You're going to do screwed up things. You're going to mess stuff up. You can't sit there and say, well, it's not perfect. This is what wears me out. When you talk about, you know, looking forward to hoping for better days and perhaps, say, form of government that is not this perverted democracy, our values religion that we live under now. And it is a religion. They preach it constantly, our democracy and our values. They repeat it like a mantra, our values. We're never told what these values are because they have to be shifted around to whatever they think your itching ears want to hear to promote what you already want to do. And this too, it is a false doctrine. It is a chasing after people's own lusts. They feed people's lusts. You see, wisdom and truth tamps all that down. Wisdom and truth says, no, you're chasing after that which will ultimately destroy you. God doesn't want you to not do these sins because, yeah, he's got this long, strict rule book. He's like the strict school teacher who used to go around and whack your knuckles with a ruler if you were breaking the rules. That's not how he works. God gives you, God wants to keep you from chasing after those things because ultimately they destroy you both in this life and in the life to come, and spiritually and physically, these things destroy you. Sound doctrine thus will rebuke you of those things, will tell you, no, do not chase after those things. You might be tempted to those things. Your own weak flesh might long for those things. You might suffer from a desire to do this. Your struggle is to withstand, is to try to not follow after those things. This is all part of the trial. This is all the point of why you're here on this earth. And yet, what does this world teach? Not only that you should chase after these things, but they feed it. They pour gasoline on the fire. They promote it. They tell you this is great. They call what is right wrong and what is wrong right. Could anyone claim that these are not the most godless times that we have ever lived in for thousands of years, possibly since the beginning of recorded history? Are these not the most godless? Well, perhaps they are, perhaps they are not. But I would say the most godless times for the thousands of years since the establishment of the early church. Now, granted, in God's judgment in the Old Testament, the people were partaking in ritualistic child sacrifice, but is that not taking place today as well? The point here is that we live in a post-Christian society now. Now, as Christian believers, that's a hard pill to swallow because it implies that as a people and as Christian believers over the years, over generations, we dropped the ball. It's true. It's a rebuke. As a people and as Christian believers, the ball was dropped. We live in a post-Christian society. And yet you will have those who say, Christianity is the reason society is shit. And that makes absolutely no sense from a more or less scientific perspective. Compare, again, we can't recreate Christianity in a lab. That's silly. But we do have history. You can look back at history and say, well, you know, when as a people we did this, this was the result. Now we're doing this, we're getting a different result. Let's compare the results. What is more desirable? In a peak Christian society, at the peak of Christianity worldwide, what? We expanded our borders. We expanded our knowledge greatly. We discovered new lands. We explored. We learned about the world around us. When foreign peoples settled in our land and began exploiting the people, we cast them out. We expelled them. In peak Christian society. And now what? Now we look in our post-Christian society, and what do we have? We've ceased expanding our horizons. This nonsense about, oh, we're going to explore space. What is this nonsensical thing? We're sending a rover to Mars. Implying that what? We're going to build a Mars colony? Really? What part of this collapsing, decaying, post-Christian society is going to go build a Mars colony? It's just TV. I don't even know that they're actually sending this. How do we know this? How do we know they're actually sending a rover to Mars? Because they're telling us they did. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. That's not really relevant. What is relevant is we're not. You can look around. We can't keep the streets functioning. We can't keep things that used to run like clockwork 50 years ago. We can't keep them going now, but we're going to go to Mars and build a Mars colony. It's foolishness. We live in a collapsing post-Christian society. Oh, we're going to go expand to Mars. And yet the depths of the ocean, the depths of what God has created right here on this earth, there's sea life down there. There's things down there. We have no idea what's down there. Just imagine it. All of this vast expanse of ocean is largely unexplored. We have no idea what's down there. Imagine, this is just an imagination thing. But imagine if you went down there and found like ancient artifacts, what would that mean? It would just open up a whole new world of possibilities. What does this mean? Well, what did the earth look like at some point in time in history? But we won't do that. We're busy putting up video on TV about a Mars rover because we're going to go do Star Trek or some shit. In a society that's gallivanting around promoting child trainees, we're going to go do Star Trek. It's absurd on its face. But that is what a post-Christian society looks like. I find it mind-boggling. You look at, okay, when we lived in an overwhelming Christian society, what did it look like? We built great architecture. Look at the beautiful architecture that even still stands today. You can't help but look at these great cathedrals and stand in awe. What do we build now? Literally satanic architecture. Hideous, ugly buildings. There's no beauty. There's no creativity. We've destroyed our own creativity by chasing after foolishness, by chasing after false doctrine, by chasing after the world, by chasing after Satan. Amazingly enough, you will run into people who will make the assertion that as a people, our future lies with rejecting Christianity. No, seriously, if you haven't yet, you will run into people who will make the assertion that to turn this whole thing around, we need to become more godless. You see, the problem is we're not godless enough. That is the assertion. They'll try to dress it up as something else. But they will make the assertion that we need to eject what is left of Christianity and we need to become more godless. And we're going to get a better result. Are we on a trajectory of getting a better result? We're more godless now as a people than we've ever been. Are we on a trajectory of things getting better? Because this makes scientific sense. Again, I guess you're not technically proving in a laboratory, but if you do A, B, and you're starting to see C and D as a result, you're on a trajectory. You're not at the end result. I don't want to know what the end result of this trajectory we're on is going to be, but I guess we're going to find out because there's no sign of it turning around. And yet you will have fools who will stand out here and say, we need to get rid of what's left of sound doctrine. We need more godlessness. We need to renounce. We need to just get away from any godliness that might be left. We got to get more godless. We're doing that. We've been doing that for several generations now. How's that working out? And it's not like we have no content. We're not proposing something new here. When we pursue sound doctrine and truth, when we proclaim salvation in the Lord Jesus Christ, when we look and follow Christian teachings, we're not proposing something new here. It's been done. We have peak Christianity to look at. And quite frankly, I think it looks better than what we have now. I think peak Christianity looks a whole lot better than modern global homo. Because there's your choice. It's not perfect. Well, what about, it's not perfect. Men are involved. You're never going to get some, get so tired. People will say, oh, well, you know, this form of government wouldn't work because in 500 years, well, yeah, no form of government. I don't care what kind of fantasies you have. Whether it's you think communism just hasn't been done right, or you think national socialism is the end all of everything. Let me tell you what, it doesn't matter what kind of government you establish. It's run by men. It's going to get corrupted. That is how it works in this world. This is how it works. If people are involved, it's going to get screwed up because that's how people are. That's how this world is. There is no perfect in this world. You cannot look and say, oh, well, yeah, but they screwed this up. Well, yeah, because people screw up. And yet, if you look at peak Christianity, I think the trajectory was a lot better than where we're at now. You cannot reject Christian principles. You cannot reject Jesus Christ. You cannot become more godless and get a different result than what you're getting now. Godlessness has brought us to where we are as a society. If you're going to embrace more godlessness, you're going to get more child trannies. You're going to get more globo homo. You're going to get more feminism, not less. Yeah, Paul said it won't suffer a woman to even speak in church. This is like anti-feminism. If you want more godlessness, you get more feminism. That's the way it works. That's the trajectory we're on. Really, think of how absurd this is. As a world, you are looking at the results. We are reaping the results of what happens when man rejects Jesus Christ. If it's to turn it around, we need to reject Jesus Christ more. we'll get a different result. Well, yeah, when everybody was embracing Jesus, it looked a lot better than it does now. We need to double down. We need to reject Jesus harder, and then things will be different. How is it more absurd than the communist who says, oh, but just communism just hasn't been done right yet. It needs to be tried again. Harder. We need more Marxism, not less. Though in all fairness, I don't know if communism, I'm not sure that the current our democracy and values religion that's also serving as some form of system that we live under. I don't know that the argument can be made that it's actually better than communism. But this is our values. This is our democracy. This is our new religion. You see, it's a new religion where man is at the top. Man just chases after whatever he wants. What could go wrong? Well, it looks like everything's going wrong. Well, we just need to do it more. The people, the society as a whole, has rejected Jesus Christ. As a Christian believer, that's a hard thing to hear, isn't it? As a people, your people, have rejected Jesus Christ willingly. It's happened over time. It's happened over generations, but they made that choice as a people. Does it mean you have sovereignty over your own decisions? This is up to you. But as a people, your people have rejected Jesus Christ. The devil didn't make them do it. The Jews didn't make them do it. The Illuminati didn't make them do it. They were presented temptations. They were presented slick arguments. But at the end of the day, you always have a choice. And the choice has been made over the generations by our society, which is our people as a whole, to reject Jesus Christ and go chasing after the world. This is the end result. We saw the result. We look back in documented history. We know the results of when people embraced and tried to follow Jesus Christ to the best of their faulty abilities. And now we see the results of when the people reject Jesus Christ. Go back to the Old Testament. It is a history book of the cycles of mankind. When the people followed the Lord and followed his statutes and followed what he lined up for them, guess what? Things went really well and their society prospered. They had peace. When they started rejecting those things, even degenerating to the point of child sacrifice, then things got really bad. Over and over, you see the historical cycles laid out for you. You know, you can read the Old Testament. You don't even have to believe this stuff. If you just read it as a historical document relaying how things were, how societies were built, how kings reigned, and how the people behaved generation after generation for years and years and years. It's instructive. You can, when the people followed the Lord and followed his statutes and his guidelines, then things went really well. When they went and rejected those things and went chasing after the world, everything went to hell in a handbasket. Same thing applied. History didn't like stop at any point. People didn't magically change at some point. As you go into after Christ's resurrection and the church was established, the same cycle stayed in place. When the people embraced Christianity and followed the Lord's statutes and followed and accepted Jesus Christ and accepted limits on their lusts, you got things going really well. And lo and behold, now we live in the times when everybody's rejected that, just as they did in the Old Testament, and we're shocked, I say, to discover that everything's going to hell in a handbasket. The cycle isn't changed. You reject the Lord, and everything goes to shit. You follow his guidelines, his statutes. Oh, you can't go chasing after every lust that comes along that you want to do, every desire you want to chase after in your flesh. You can't go following Satan and everything goes fine. Everything goes to shit. That's the pattern. Follow the Lord, things go well. Follow Satan, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. It's not that hard. You see it in history over again. Peak Christian society in history. Things were pretty, yeah, we didn't have modern technology. That's not the end all. People had free time. People had the free time for the serfs to go out and build beautiful architecture because the crops were planted. They're waiting on a rain. It's not harvest time. What else are we going to do? Well, We're going to build this beautiful cathedral that will stand for hundreds of years. Hey, but now we just work 12, 14-hour days all day long just to scrape by. But look, we got a phone, and we can post on Facebook on our phone. See? We've got things so much better. Gadgets. Technology. No freedom. No time to pursue interest. No time to pursue our own knowledge, to expand our own knowledge. But we have gadgets. We have technology. We become wise in our own conceit. As we read in Proverbs, there's more hope for a fool than somebody who gets wise in their own conceit. They get so full of themselves. Apply this to a society as a whole. What do they try to tell everybody? The democracy and our values. This is the pinnacle. This is the, how much more conceited could it be? Our democracy and our values. This is the pinnacle. This is the ultimate peak of civilization, but it's not. It's not. There's more hope for a fool than those who are wise in their own conceit. They're so full of themselves. Make no mistake, as we wrap up here, make no mistake, what you see today is the result of godlessness. It's recorded throughout history. This is what you get when you follow the Lord. Peaceful, prospering societies. When you reject the Lord, you get shit societies that do ritualistic child murder, that do ritualistic child sacrifice, that has no kind of regard for the future. There's no love in the hearts of men. They're just running around like beasts chasing their own wanton desires. I'll often say, you know, we live in a time of judgment. Well, that's not some, you know, like rare, brilliant biblical insight. I didn't wake up this morning and a voice from heaven spoke and said, "Dan, you live in a time of judgment." Well, thank you, Lord. No, I just look at the cycles. Look at the cycles. People were in the cycle now. Everybody has rejected the Lord and gone chasing after. Chasing after teachers that tell them what they want to hear. They've given up. They're just chasing after their own lusts and desires. Well, I look at the historical cycle. We know where this goes, and we're seeing the results now. Anybody who will tell you that the results, that if you don't like the results that you are seeing, and the answer is to do more of what you are doing, is preaching a falsehood to you. They're leading you astray. And it doesn't take great biblical insight to understand this. If somebody says, well, what you're, you know, if you're doing something that's giving you a result you don't like, and anybody that comes along and says, well, you need to do more of that and you'll get a better result, common sense will tell you that's not true. If you look around at the society you live in today, this is what a society that rejects the Lord looks like. If you like it, if you think this is great, and you're free to do that, if you like where this is going, then by all means, you should reject the Lord more and harder because you will get more of this result. As a people, you should reject and get further from God because you're going to get more of what you're getting right now as a result, because what you are getting is literally a result of rejecting the Lord. So yes, if this is, you think this is great and you want more of it, then by all means, that's what you should do. However, if you don't like where this shit show is going, then I think it's pretty sound advice to say that you need to turn away from what the society is doing. If by rejecting the Lord, you're getting more of this clown show, then you want to go with him. You want to do something different. The further you get from the Lord, the more of this shit show you get. That is an observable reality. So if you don't want more of that, then you need to get closer to God. We're going to wrap up on that note. Once again, thanks to all of you. Financially support the show. I'm glad all of you come by. I always look forward to these visits. Thank you for stopping by. And don't forget, I do sit down on Fridays with Sir Longshanks for the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. It's always a fun discussion. Be sure and check it out. It's always a fun time. Be sure and check us out next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.